Last week, I talked about bear safety, because bear attacks experienced a bit of a spike in our state last month. Summer's normally the time to be thinking about bear safety anyway, and that spike seemed like solid impetus to prompt a discussion. One of the things that was discussed was an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, as the old saying goes. There are any number of preventative measures that you can put in place and execute that will go a long way towards minimizing the odds of a bad bear encounter. Some of those involve actions to be taken, while others involve tools or items. Fact is, the same could be said for just about any potential danger or hazard. Preventative measures and the proper tools will either help to minimize the danger or possibly mitigate it severely should the danger arise. Think things like spare tires for vehicles, a winch for an ATV, or fire extinguishers anywhere that a fire might occur. Add to that that one of the things that was mentioned last week is that while bear attacks do happen, you're much more likely to be involved in a health or safety danger not covered in fur and having large claws and teeth. I mentioned some of those as well. Today, I'd like to hit on one of the biggest threats you'll face, even if it doesn't look as scary as a walking, breathing, slobbering member of the Urson family. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. So what's that threat? Boats, that's what. I've often wondered how many folks in and around the Bristol Bay region have some form of boat that they use each and every year. I've got to believe those who don't are in a very small minority. I'll be honest, I do not at all consider myself a serious boater, and yet I've somehow managed, through the years, to acquire a couple of skiffs, two rafts, and a canoe. I honestly cannot think of a person that I socialize with on any level who doesn't have at least one boat of some sort, and most are like me and own several. And that's a good thing, a very good thing, because boats of all sorts make it easier and a lot more fun to access so many of the places we go to both have fun and put things in our freezers, whether those things are moose, salmon, berries, or what have you. The thing is, statistically, that boat you get in when you get to the water is more dangerous than a bear you see walking the shore. I hope it's obvious that I'm not trying to scare anyone away from the water. If anything, on many previous occasions, I've encouraged people to take to the water, as it's one of the best ways we have available to us to get out and really enjoy the land around us. No, the use of boats of just about any type is decidedly a good thing. Buy 'em, borrow 'em, use 'em. The purpose in mentioning that, in comparing boats to bears, is twofold. To point out that boating does carry a level of danger, though it's still pretty low. Also, it's to point to the fact that there are things we can do and tools we can carry to minimize those dangers. Lest you think that I'm pushing something that's just not an issue at all, let me throw some numbers at you. Nationally, overall, there were 701 recreational boating-related deaths in the country in 2016. That was up over 70 from the previous year. Closer to home, there were 19 boating-related fatalities in Alaska last year, and we also experienced a jump, with that being almost double the number from 2015. So boating accidents are certainly not a non-issue, both in Alaska and across our country as a whole. The obvious, best, most important step you can take is to always wear a life vest or float coat or life jacket, or whatever name you happen to want to use to describe that buoyant flotation device that you put on before you actually go anywhere in a boat. The majority of those boating fatalities, well, just under 70% for Alaska, involved people who were not wearing a life vest. Tied to wearing one is wearing the right one. You know, the right tool for the job. There are several options, and within each of those options are still more style options. The actual name you'll find online or when talking to reputable agencies that deal with such things is PFD, or personal flotation device, though feel free to use whatever term you normally use. PFDs come in a variety of different shapes, colors, and materials. Some are made to be more streamlined, while others are made with more rigid protections in mind, such as protecting you from hypothermia. No matter which type of PFD you use, be sure to get one that you're going to like, because the best PFD is the one that you will always put on and wear every time you go out. There are 5 different types of PFDs available. Type 1 PFDs, or offshore life jackets, are the most buoyant PFDs and suitable for any and all water conditions, including rough and distant waters where rescue may be delayed. Type 1s are relatively bulky in comparison to other types. Their bulkiness is their main disadvantage. Simply put, they're not quite as comfortable to wear as others. They have a very important feature, though. They'll turn most unconscious individuals to the face-up position when in the water. Type 2 PFDs, or nearshore buoyancy vests, are for calm, open waters where a rescue has a chance of happening fairly quickly. Some Type 2s will also turn unconscious users over in the water, but that's not an across-the-board truth. This type of PFD is less bulky than a Type 1, and they are often the least expensive of the PFD types. Type 3 PFDs, or flotation aids, are for calm and open water where a rescue will most likely occur quickly. These PFDs are designed to keep the wearer in a vertical position, but it's up to you to get yourself into a face-up position. These types of vests are the most comfortable to wear, and popular for recreational boating and fishing, and if they were actually counted up, probably the most common type you'll see in most boats around the area. Type 4 PFDs aren't jackets or vests at all, but throwable devices such as seat cushions or ring-type flotation devices. They are designed to be thrown to someone in trouble and serve as a backup to a PFD. And then finally, Type 5s are special-use flotation devices. Type 5s are specialized PFDs for specific activities. To be acceptable by the U.S. Coast Guard, they have to be used in a manner that's consistent with the activity that's actually specified on a label on the PFD. Again, the best PFD is the one that you're going to put on each and every time without fail. Most PFDs you see on recreational boats, again, are Type 3s. Comfort factors into that for most folks. Simply put, if it's comfortable, you'll put it on. Proper sizing plays a large role in this as well. For adults, your chest size, not your weight, will determine what size is right. While with kids, you go by weight. A PFD should have a snug fit, something like a glove, but allow for freedom of movement. And for any PFD, if you have a chance to try it on before purchasing it, so much the better. So having and using a PFD each and every time is the biggest preventative measure that you can take to make boating less dangerous. It's such a simple thing, and yet each year people in Alaska die in boating accidents who weren't wearing a PFD. I don't have the stats for it, but I remember somebody reputable once telling me that far and away most of those who die without a PFD are adult males. The logic is that it's something of a macho thing that men don't need PFDs. To that I would say this. I would counter that mindset with the idea that, well, lying in a coffin dead isn't very macho either. Here's another safety thing that can make boating a lot safer. Don't drink and drive. That sounds so basic it shouldn't even be worth mentioning. And yet, last year alcohol was the leading known contributing factor of boating accidents across the United States, which means there's a whole lot of people out there who aren't getting that or are flat out ignoring a huge boating danger. I'd suggest such folks are the type competing for those Darwin Awards you read about, but sadly I'm sure there are others at risk because they're in a boat with a person vying for a Darwin Award. The rather simple bottom line is that alcohol is a very poor idea when boating. There are a number of other things you can do as well to make things safer, beyond no booze and always wearing a PFD. I'm running out of time, so I'll list a few things that come to mind. Using a boat and motor, if it has one, that's in good running condition, eliminates opportunities for mechanical failures to put you in tight spots. Also, give heed to the weather and don't travel in iffy conditions. If the weather and water conditions give you pause at all, there's likely a reason for it. Play it safe. Tied to that somewhat is to always let people know where you are, when you'll leave, and when you'll be back. Have multiple signaling devices on board, both sound devices and visual, so you can let folks know you're in distress. Communications are a must as well, such as marine radios, sat phones, or personal locator beacons. Actually, it's good to have redundancies built in. Don't overload the boat. Keep it within the parameters of what the manufacturer intended. It's a good idea to have other means of propulsion aboard if it's a motorized watercraft, such as a small extra kicker and a set of oars. And by all means, have emergency survival gear on hand in case you wind up stranded and have a well-stocked, up-to-date first aid kit. Again, this is not meant to discourage anyone from getting out on the water. Quite the opposite, actually. If you have a chance to get out and go boating, take advantage of that every chance you get. Just remember to be safe about it, so you wind up being a happy boater over the course of a lifetime, and not just a statistic in a safety report. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.